I'm recording also. Minute 42, minute 43.
All right, I'm clicking broadcast.
Fingers on the button. That didn't come out right. I said my fingers on the button. It sounds like I'm a child of the Cold War era. Oh, I guess I am.
I've got the key. I got one key. You got the other, right?
I got the other key. Technorama episode 399. 399. Sounds like we're trying to make a deal and not make you think it's $4. For February 19th, 2014, Spin Cycle Gone Wrong. Only $3.99.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now,
the news.
Tech. What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, I'm looking for this song. It goes like this. Dun, 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 dun.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Whoa, the burritos. Welcome to Technorama for February 19th, 2014. This is the show that takes a lighthearted, and we do mean lighthearted, look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good. As we record this, you know, I'm very happy that we've been digging out of the snow.
Yeah. Snow there. Boo-hoo.
Actually, I kept thinking about this. You know, when the last day it snowed, which was on Thursday, it was snowing a little bit. Harrison and I got out about noon, and we were playing for a little bit. The snow stopped. I looked up. There's blue sky. Oh, look, there's the sun. Within about 30 minutes, slush. It was crap. It wasn't worth even playing in at that point.
You could go make a slush man.
Yeah. Well, Harrison did make a snowman, and he did a face plant later because he melted.
Make slush angels.
Is that what y'all do in Wisconsin?
Make slush angels? But those don't come along till about July.
Yeah. Actually, it went away pretty quick today. There's some here and there where you can tell the shadows have been hiding, but it's not too bad.
I love the fact that for the listeners who don't know, the putting the show together is a collaborative effort. So during the week, we'll find stories and whatnot, and then on Saturday and Sunday, Craig and I'll throw together the show notes, and I'll do the on this day in history part, go do the research, and put the wording together and whatnot. And together we go back and forth, and we've kind of had these default roles for a while. It's like, okay, show notes are done. Go touch them up. And Craig comes up with usually the show title and the media corner thing, but he doesn't always know what I'm going to do with them. So I love watching the look on your face, because as I'm looking for this song, it goes like this. And he's just got in there.
Make it up.
What do you want to do?
That was actually pretty good.
I just like watching your face when I do stuff like that.
Yeah, it was fun.
It goes both ways. So if you're not watching the video, you could go watch the video and at least watch the first minute and a half.
Yeah, it looks like I'm choking on something.
Which we usually do on this show. And if you're listening, you're probably choking too.
Yeah, right. Like
for different reasons. Hey, we're going to take a quick break and come right back. Coming up in this episode, we have three verbs. Lungs, fish, and dune. Not lungfish. Not fish dune.
Those aren't verbs.
It would seem another season of Tales from the Archives is upon us. Ugh. Dr. Sound must be under the impression we have nothing else to tend to down here. With a new season, we need to make a new promo.
Why not have our intern do it?
We have an intern?
Yes, Wellington. Catherine!
Good day, Eliza. How's it going, eh?
Lovely. Thank you for asking.
We have an intern? In the archives?
Any difficulties with my assigned tasks?
The compass retrieved from the ghost ship of Northumberland Strait keeps trying to reappear on different shelves, but I think I got it secured.
How did you do that?
Maple syrup. Sticky stuff, eh?
We have an intern.
Excellent. Welly and I were wondering if you have a moment to make a promo for us.
Oh, sure.
Tales from the Archives, Volume 3.
the Steampunk Chronicle Reader's Choice winner and Parsec-winning podcast from Pip Ballantyne and T. Morris.
Oh, she's very good.
Subscribe for free through iTunes or at the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences website at ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com.
I say, Catherine, would you mind topping off my tea? There's a good lass.
Oh, tea, coffee.
Wellington, don't antagonize the Canadian. It's very rude.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics, author of the new book, Physics of the Impossible. Yet, I can't even figure out Technorama.
Did I say verbs? I meant nouns. Oops.
All the kids are doing it nowadays. They call it lungs.
Well, fish is a verb.
Yeah.
Dune. What you doing?
You could fish for, yeah. Fish is the only one.
What you doing?
Yeah, what you doing?
All right, real quick movie reviews. We'll put these at the top of the show because they usually come along later when the listener's tired or has fallen asleep at the wheel. So yeah, we'll get you falling asleep quicker. This past weekend, I did see RoboCop, the 2014 version.
Yes.
Not to think that I'm really slow at seeing the Peter Weller version.
Wait, and you did see the first one, right?
Oh, heavens, yes, many times.
How about that for a dollar?
Right. Well, they did stick that line in as a homage.
It did they?
I'll buy that for the dollar. They were doing some tests, and it didn't go well, and the guy said, I won't buy that for a dollar. So it was a nice little laugh.
And that's
like,
nice.
Yeah, they got to get that in somewhere. All right. Now, the part of the movie, it by and large, I liked it. You know,
okay.
It's like Batman. Don't try to compare each one with the each one, you know.
Right.
Just enjoy them as they are and go, wow, cool special effects. This one differed a little bit in the storyline. Not much. I mean, still got man has tragedy. Tragedy gets put in, you know, his remaining parts get put in a robot. But unlike the Peter Weller one where he slowly discovers his humanity, this one, he's quite human and
he's aware.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they actually have to suppress that. And then he starts to break through and, you know, comes back again. So there's the Samuel Jackson part of the movie really, you know, didn't quite make sense. It added
what's in your wallet?
Flair. Huh? Yeah, no. Mace Windu, no!
Yeah.
And Michael Keaton did a pretty good job, but I didn't quite feel like he was the enemy until the very end.
Wait, you know, don't spoil it now.
Corporation.
Don't spoil
it's
it.
It's the same basic storyline, only instead of Oscorp, it's Omnicorp.
Oscorp. Right.
So it was well done. I liked it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a 6000 SUX. He drives around a cool motorcycle. So there's that factor too.
Now, RoboCop, I know looking at the trailers, he looks like he has a lot more mobility than Peter Weller did in that other suit.
Well, that's the interesting part. It's some more mobility. He still does the, you know, turn the body before you turn the head when you turn a corner.
Well, I've seen him running and jumping in the trailer. That's why I was getting at.
The part of the movie where the whole thing kind of went south was when they were in the car and he was making these minor adjustments and it sounded like a vacuum cleaner. And then I couldn't stop laughing. He's like,
I recognize that. That's a Hoover. I recognize that.
Right. Yeah. Dustbusters.
Who are you going to call?
So I thought it was good. If you want to go see it in the movies, you'll probably enjoy it.
All right. From,
you know,
on a scale from one to con.
One to con. I was going to say 1 to 5, but okay. Well, I'd say it's a solid 3.
Out of 5. Okay.
It's not a stay at home, wait for Netflix kind of thing. It's, you know, I'd go out and see it. It's good.
Okay. Well, speaking of movies, in a sense, you know, I ended up buying a TV this last weekend because ours was starting to get washed out. The contrast wasn't quite right. So we bought a new TV and it did come with 3D, and that I was not looking to buy a TV because of the 3D feature. You know, it was kind of like, it seemed to meet all the other requirements and 3D was an added bonus kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and nowadays, you know, 3D is not really, it doesn't seem like, it's something you pay for, like, you know, before it was like $1,500 more for.
Yeah, I had a $2,000 TV, and they said, "Oh, you can get it in 3D for another $1,000." Like, no.
Yeah, same. We got the whole TV less than $800, to be honest with you.
What size?
50-inch.
Not bad.
So yeah, we got a 50-inch TV. It's got 4 HDMI, all that good stuff. You know, all the connectors, Ethernet jack, which I was kind of surprised. I thought it was going to be wireless only, but so I use the Ethernet jack.
So it's a smart TV?
It is a smart TV. It has Netflix and everything else, which is what I'm getting at. Is we have a new Blu-ray coming because our Samsung, I think you got the same thing, that Samsung.
Yeah, like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, it's starting to act funky when we're trying to play things, and screen blacks out when we're watching a movie. And
no, that's your Netflix DVDs. They're all beat up and banged up and scratched up.
Well, no. It's the Blu-ray player. But anyway, so we're replacing that. That one is actually also coming with 3D. Again, didn't seem like it really affected the cost. It was just a part of the deal. Anyway, it's not here yet. So I was wanting to see something in 3D. You know, to see this TV work. And then it dawned on me, said, well, maybe Netflix has something. So I went and looked around. Netflix had some 3D content due to some articles I read. So I went looking for it. I couldn't find it on any of the streaming stuff on my phone. I looked online, couldn't see really anything. But when I used the Netflix app on the TV, which, you know, of course, the TV's 3D enabled, there's a whole row right there for 3D content.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the
smart TV knew enough to enable the 3D content on Netflix?
Well, yeah. I imagine the client that's on the TV, you know, says, oh, this is a 3D enabled device kind of thing.
Nice.
So there's a whole row.
So what'd you watch?
You know the movie The Croods? It's the animated film about the cavemen?
Yep. Yep.
Well, that one happened to be on Netflix streaming, and it was in 3D. So I hit play. It comes up and says, do you want to watch this in 3D? I said, yes. And of course, you see the little kind of, it looks like an interlaced version of the screen picture. I put the glasses on. Bam. It looked fantastic. I could not believe how well it looked. The TV it had a great picture. It was very, very surprised. So
nice.
So the only problem is they said that the streaming of 3D titles requires like a 6 megabit connection. Internet connection.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with that, but you could see that the voice was getting off a little bit. I think what they're actually doing is sending 2 pictures to your screen at the same time and doing the interlacing. So I'm not sure quite how that works. But I also tried this. The glasses are they're passive. There's no power in them. You know, it's just put them on. So I happen to have some real 3D glasses from the movie theater, and they worked.
So it's polarized. It's not the active 120 hertz refresh split.
Right. That's correct. Okay. And so I had some Darth Maul real 3D glasses that were given to us when we saw with the Phantom Menace in the theater. And sure enough, there it was. You know, it worked just fine. So the TV actually came with 8 glasses.
Which wow, I was a little that assumes you have some friends.
They assume.
you know what? Just throw 4 of them in the couch cushion now.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and offset that Moore's law. Yeah. So actually, Kim and I both thought it said 4 on the box, and when we opened up the whole thing, there was 8. It's like, wow.
There were 8 lenses. They were all over the place. Yeah. You have to hold them up to your eyes by yourself.
Oh, literally, 4 pairs. Ah. Not just 4 pairs of glasses, 4 pairs.
Well, that sounds pretty cool.
So, yes, and it was a Vizio TV, which I wasn't sure about the brand so much, but I did a little research, and I had some good reviews while we were standing in the store, you know. So, yeah, it's a good deal, seems to be.
All right. Well, look forward to hearing more about your 3D content.
Yeah.
We're going to do the history thing.
No.
On this day in history for February 19th, 2014, this is the 50th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 315 days remaining in 2014. It was on this date in 1600 that the Peruvian stratovolcano Hayanaptina, I hope it's close to that, I don't know, it exploded in the most violent eruption in recorded history of South America.
And that same date in 1819, British explorer William Smith discovers the South Shetland Islands and claims them in the name of King George III. I don't know how I got caught up on that.
That sounds like one of those tongue twisters. South Shetland, South Shetland, South Shetland. The first group of rescuers reaches the Donner Party on this date in 1847.
And on February 19th, 1876, was the founding of the National Amateur Press Association, NAPA, in Philadelphia.
I wonder if the car parts people got all over their case for that.
Yeah.
Thomas Edison. Let me do it this way.
Thomas Edison patents the phonograph today in 1878.
Yes. And 54 years ago.
I have a wax cylinder around here somewhere.
What's that?
I think I have a wax cylinder around here somewhere.
Yes. We'll talk about that later. And 54 years ago today, China successfully launches the T-7, its first sounding rocket.
The other ones must have been deaf. I don't know.
It's the same.
William J. Schroeder becomes the first recipient of an artificial heart to leave the hospital on this date in 1985. See ya!
Yeah, later. And 12 years ago, NASA's Mars Odyssey space probe begins to map the surface of Mars using its thermal emission imaging system.
Happy birthday goes out of this date to Polish mathematician and astronomer Nicholas Copernicus! Woo! Born on this date in 1473.
Party! And also born on this date in 1660, German physician and chemist Friedrich Hoffmann.
Sven Heiden, the Swedish geographer and explorer, was born today in 1865.
And actor Lee Marvin would have been 90 today.
Physician astronaut Joseph P. Kerwin turns 82 today.
And game designer and programmer Danielle Bunton-Berry. Bunton? Barry, whatever, was born today in 1949.
And finally, Mexican astronaut Rodolfo Neri Vela turned 62. And that's the way it was on this day in history for February 19th, 2014. Da-da-da-da-da.
There's no words here.
We'll make them up as we go.
Bad news, fancy men.
You know, hey, I should learn by to the way, tag these better.
You know, I was waiting for him going, impending news, everyone.
This one?
News and weather, everyone.
No, this one. Oh, that one's dead.
Good news, everyone.
What? Anyway, now that we've played just about all the clips, then it's time for me to get more. UTMB scientists successfully grow human lungs in the lab in just 3 days.
Suck it, cancer.
No 3D printer needed. Suck it, cancer. They can now bring back that man from the X-Files.
Yeah, the cigarette smoking man.
Andrew, I don't think you know what you're...
CSG's in good hands now.
More than 1,600 people are on the waiting list for a lung transplant. Now scientists at UTMB in Galveston have come up with something that will give them hope. A new hope.
There's another.
For the first time, scientists have successfully grown human lungs in the lab. Growing organs may seem like science fiction. You know, what? A lot of articles we read start out that way, right?
Yeah.
Something right out of Star Trek. Something right out of science fiction.
Yeah.
Something right out of... Something you never thought would happen with your wife around. Oh, wait, that's a different magazine to read.
Something happened right out of Battlestar Galactica.
But it's the goal of medical researchers because so many people need organ transplants, including churches. Get it? And many die waiting for one.
Hey, Chuck, by the way, yes. I'm waiting for the story where it says, This is something that happened right straight out of Terminator.
This happened straight out of Technorama. Run for your life.
Yeah.
The most exciting part is to shorten the time people have to wait for an organ transplant, said UTMB Dr. Joaquin Cortiella. Yeah, Dr. C. How
Joaquin.
Do they do
That's
it,
Joaquin.
You may ask.
Joaquin Cortiella.
Cortea.
There you go.
What is it with our language things? Anyway. How do they do it, you may ask? They started with a damaged lung. We removed all the cells, all the material in it, and just left the skeleton of the lung. Lungs don't have skeletons.
No, it's just the cell, not the structure, but it's just the, they remove all the cells from it, so you just have like a basic structure of it, and it has like a shape. I've seen it with a heart.
I'm sensing stem cells are in here somewhere, right?
That's correct.
Then we added back cells from another lung that couldn't be used for transplant, but still had some viable cells in it, said Dr. Joan Nichols. Hey, a name I can read. But it took months until UTMB medical student named Dr. Michael Riddle. Ooh, good thing his name wasn't Tom Riddle.
Riddle me this.
No, if it was Dr. Tom Riddle, it'd be... Anyway.
Harry?
Built a piece... I just waved my magic wand. And poof, a snake lung appears. Anyway. He's the one who went home with actually... He's the one who went home and actually built using, I'm not kidding, a fish tank that he went and bought from a pet store, is what he built the first piece of equipment. Oh, wow. We have another fish tank story coming up.
Wait a minute. I got a big question. Did they reimburse him? Sorry.
Must have your receipt. Must not include. Anyway. Yeah. Took us about 4 months to take the cells from the lung to where all you have is a bioscaffold. And we took that process down to about 3 days, Dr. Riddle said. UTMB scientists grew their first human lungs in the lab last year. Eyewitness News is the first to report it.
Hey, I want to say, though, it's kind of amazing, I mean, that they did this to begin with. But it's even more amazing that guy went and bought off-the-shelf material and made it happen faster.
Of course.
You know.
Little duct tape.
Yeah.
Little bubble wrap. We're good.
Yeah, some lung tissue just got laying around. But no, I mean, it's just amazing that somebody could go, wait, I think I could do this a little quicker. I'll be back in a couple of days and, you know, build some funky thing out of a fish tank and some hardware parts. I mean, there's a PetSmart and a Home Depot right next door to each other. Maybe I should go pick up some parts there.
You know, there's one here, too. It must be a combination they have or something.
Yeah. I bet they're under the same parent company.
And speaking of other combinations.
Anyway, that's an amazing story, by the way.
We talked about Nike doing the Back to the Future shoot, right?
Yeah, it was.
Coming back with these?
About 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Back in 2011, Nike revealed a limited run of the Back to the Future Part 2 inspired sneakers. The edition, set at 1,500 pairs, replicated the future 2015, next year.
Yeah.
Nike mags worn by Michael J. Fox's Marty McFly in the 1989 film. Although, where was I? Although lacked the movie's power laces function, the whole lot went directly on eBay as part of a charity effort on the part of Michael J. Fox Foundation. Today, Nike designer Tinker Hatfield, love that name, Tinker. What else are you going to be, an inventor?
Maybe he's going to make some lung tissue.
Has revealed to Soul Collector that the company is getting ready to take another look at Marty's shoes and will release functioning power laces next year, which happens to be 2015.
That's right.
Wow. Where are the flying cars?
Well, no, the hoverboard. I want the hoverboard from Mattel.
I can't even ride a regular board.
You know what? I think we should also all start wearing double ties. You know, two ties.
Double ties.
Remember he had like two.
Oh, yeah. Needles?
Yeah. Well, yeah,
no,
they
Marty,
all did.
Yeah, Marty had. Yeah. We could do that. That'd be an easy cosplay, right?
Sure. Actually, yeah, wear a suit with two. I think Marty had like this sunburst looking tie. Yeah, I got to get two of those.
You got to get two of something.
Yeah.
It's hard to find two of the same ties on a rack.
I haven't really tried that. Maybe, yeah, you're probably right.
Let's take a quick look at the birthday calendar. We have a few of them. We have 6 this week, 2 on the 19th, Scooter in Connecticut. Happy birthday, Stephen Sumter.
Wait, Scooter?
On the 19th.
He's one of the Muppets.
Uncle Kermit. The 23rd is Zaha Doom. He happens to be in the chat room right now.
Wow.
Yay.
For Zaha real. Doom. See?
Zaha Doom.
We should find that audio clip somewhere. Also on the 23rd is Keith Hughes, a.k.a. Ed Gizmo. The 25th, well, we have two on the 19th, two on the 23rd, two on the 25th. I'm sensing a pattern here.
Yeah, a lot of births right in a row.
21st is Norbert. 25th is Norbert. Stop talking when I'm trying to listen.
I think you said that last time, too.
You said 20. Anyway,
no.
You said birth, and I said 25th at the same time, and it came out as 21st. If you go fourth on the, old anti-drinking ad that I remember on the radio from years ago. It was something like, if you want to go fourth on the fifth, don't go fourth on the fourth with a fifth or something. Anyway, also Sandy Shepherd, Mark, it's your birthday. It's your wife's birthday again.
Yeah. Gift time.
Pony up. Yep. It follows Valentine's Day. So why don't you just buy two things at the same time, and make it cheaper on everything.
Yeah.
And if you want to get on the birthday calendar, it's real cheap too. Go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. Happy birthday to all the people who are on the calendar. And if you're not on the calendar, happy birthday to you as well. And we will give you a shout out at the appropriate time, as long as we're on the air at that time.
Yeah, no guarantees, but.
Well, work happens.
Yeah.
Hacks and strange stories.
Hey, by the way,
yes, sir.
Before we move forward, might want to tell everybody early in on the show here that next episode is 400. If you want to say something to us, now's your time. It's a little open ended there,
it's that sequel to 300. Yeah. That movie that's coming out with Xerxes.
Yeah, Chuck are going to do
this. That's why this was $3.99, because we knock a penny off of it, so you don't feel like you're spending $4.
It's actually, Chuck, maybe me and you should do this podcast shirtless with our six pack showing.
The spray on abs?
Yeah, the spray on. Just actually, I have like a shrink wrap thing. You know, they do with, they do this with cars. You just you put it on.
Right.
Yeah. You know, wrap
spray
it.
Spray on hair.
Wrap your abs. There we go.
All right. Some people may not know this, and some people may. I grew up in an old Victorian home.
Did you know?
But it never had anything in the attic like this. Well, in my imagination, it did.
Yeah. Yours is boxes and a couple of push buttons.
This is the 5.35 million or 3.25 million pounds. So three and a quarter million pounds or five and change million dollars Victorian mansion for sale in London. It has 7,000 square feet, 11 bedrooms, a ton of restrooms, and a spaceship playhouse in the attic.
That's awesome.
Well, I did too, but it was just like chalk on the floor and cardboard boxes.
Yeah, I had boxes with, with Sharpies and stuff,
So what they did is up in the attic where the peaks of the, the gables and whatnot come together, they just used that as the walls to their spaceship and put a couple of chairs in there and some monitors. It looked like a great place to store your old CRTs.
That's what I was gonna say.
That looks like my basement now that I think about it.
Yeah. Oh, there it is, your basement.
Just use that as a spaceship.
It looks really cool though.
So you go up into the attic and you sit in these chairs, and then what? Do you play with the computers?
Sure, why not?
Does it do anything? Does it make sound?
I don't know. That's a good question. Here, let me show everybody the picture real quick. I don't know. I don't know. What does it say?
Is it somebody's room?
I'd sleep in there.
Or is it somebody's office?
Hey, yeah, they have to sleep in these bags. They're vertical.
Yeah. But there is gravity, so you're just sleeping standing up.
Yeah. Here, let me go pull up the article.
It's a pretty cool idea.
Let me go pull up the article because I want to know more.
You wouldn't suspect it. It looks like about the same size as my old house, too.
Yeah, it doesn't say much. I wonder if it says it on the real estate listing.
The real estate. Check it out on
therightmove.co.uk.
Speaking of other hacks and strange stories, I saw this one a couple of times, and I'm glad you picked up on it.
Yeah.
A fish can now drive its own tank around on wheels.
Yes.
Okay.
Very cool.
Company called Studio Dip, that's Dip with two eyes.
Ah, Dip.
Dip indeed. Has created a motorized go-kart for fish. The why is the first question that comes to mind. At this point, we're only able to give you the how.
Okay.
When little Dory starts to swim, Dory.
Dory. It's not even blue.
No, that should be Nemo.
That's right.
When little Dory starts to swim in a particular direction, her movement is captured by a top-mounted webcam processing by a beagle board and is used to steer the Arduino controller carriage under her bowl. As seen in this video after the fold, that lets her follow her muse outside the aquarium's confines. We're hoping this experiment makes it beyond the lab one day, and we're pretty darn curious to see where a fish wants to go.
Did you watch the video?
Away from the cat or towards the ocean? Watch out for the stairs!
Cat. Actually, you know what?
Chasing the cat around.
Yeah, this looks like some kind of, like some precursor to a cartoon where the fish gets into a mechanized bowl. You know,
it does have the writings of a cartoon, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I wonder, I watched the video and I was trying to see if the, trying to recognize if the thing was moving actually, or the fish was actually, I know it's controlling its
That's
forward motion.
What I had a hard time determining also.
Yeah, I was trying to see if the fish was actually making decisions on, should I turn here instead of just, oh, I'm just going this way.
Yeah, tough to figure out.
But
all right, we got one more story to do. We got a lot more stories to do, but we're going to get this one done before the break. NASA is working on Star Trek healing devices. It's not sci-fi anymore.
Speaking of, you know,
this may sound like it's straight out of Star Trek. No doubt that's what they wrote. Look at this. NASA and Houston-based company Grok Technologies will work on the development of new breakthrough products, non-invasive medical technologies designed to, quote, regenerate bone and muscle tissues, unquote. It really sounds like something out of Star Trek.
That's what.
But it's not just sci-fi anymore.
Hey, actually, we should do a segment of our show called Straight Out of Star Trek or Straight Out of Star Wars.
Straight Out of Sci-Fi. Straight out of
Dukes of Hazzard.
That's exactly what Grok's founder and CEO Moshe Kushman says. It's not just science fiction anymore. It's not just for breakfast anymore. All indications are that 21st century life sciences will change dramatically during the next several decades. And Grok is working to define the forefront of a new scientific wave. According to the press release, NASA is interested in the potential these technologies present for regenerating bone and muscle. It wants this tissue regeneration technology to help astronauts during long interplanetary travel when they, quote, are susceptible to developing osteopenia, which is a condition arising from the loss of bone and muscle mass and bone density.
Oh, I thought it had sounded like it had something to do with the male member.
No. If it starts out with osteo, it's around the bones.
Yeah, true. Okay.
Well, even that sounds like the male member, but anyway.
Hey, how often do astronauts scratch themselves where they need like a Band-Aid or something? Does that happen? I guess it would.
It does.
Yeah.
You know, they've got stuff sticking out on all directions in the
ISS. Know, you never hear Chris Hadfield had a scratch today and he put a Band-Aid on. I mean, I'm just curious how often an injury happens like that.
I bet it happens more than you think, you know, because you're floating around and something comes and whacks you in the head.
Yeah. I'm sure it's happened. It's just, you know, right. You never hear about it. So
you don't see the videos on the TV broadcast where they have a patch on their forehead.
Yeah. You know, NASA doesn't have a webcam on the little, you know, X amount of days without an incident sign.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. Technorama's been on the air for X amount of days without an accident.
Yeah.
No, that never happens because there's an accident in every show. It's like a prize in every box.
The show is an accident.
Hey, we're not rocket scientists. They are. It's a Pac-Man ass tattoo.
You will see someone's posterior not disgustingly displayed. I always think of Patty and Selma on The Simpsons. Well, it's not a high-res butt, kids. You could end up like Craig. Why is that the example everybody uses?
I don't know. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchain.com. Send audio comments.
Have you been drinking tonight? Leave the podcasting to the professionals.
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from Mythbusters, and Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Let's see who's in the chat room. We know that there were a few there earlier, right?
There's a couple in there.
This is the part of the show where we give a shout out to the chat room. I just made a new chat room song. We have you and me, of course. We have Captain Rootbeer, Mad Marv, the Giant, Tim Elliott, and Zahadoom.
Yeah.
That's just fun to say again.
Yeah, Zahadoom.
If you want to join us in the chat room, Sunday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, U.S. Eastern, not Central European time, is when you want to be there. We are on Google Plus Hangout, but you don't need to have Google Plus Hangouts to watch us and interact with us. You can do that live from our page at chuckchat.com/webcam. And if we're not there, you can always watch the latest episode because Craig is awesome and puts it up there. And it's just like part of that internet magic stuff he does.
Yeah. Ooh. Don't look at the webcam, kids.
Oh, bye.
Magic. Ding, ding, ding.
Let's do the Remember When music. I love this song.
You just throw it in your iPod or your phone, rather, and listen to it all day long.
Still makes me think of Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
Hey, Ren.
Yeah.
This is
This is the kind of music that they would have used on Ren and Stimpy.
They have used this on Ren and Stimpy.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. A story about Georges Lemaître. I hope that's close. My French is worse than my Spanish.
Lemaître.
The greatest scientist you never heard of. There's a perception that religion and science go together about as well as mayonnaise and marshmallows. Okay, quick side note. Ghostbusters was on. The original one?
Yes.
And you know when Venkman comes into what's-her-name's apartment to check out the refrigerator?
Right.
Sigourney Weaver?
Right.
And she sets the groceries down and like the egg jumps out of the cart and starts frying on the counter?
Yes.
There's a package of Stay Puft marshmallows on the counter.
Oh, yeah.
I've never noticed that before. Anyway.
Yeah, that's funny.
The thing about marshmallows came up. I mean, the movie's been around for 30 years, and I never noticed the Stay Puft marshmallows.
You don't watch it every day.
In some instances, this is perhaps true, but on a typically warm Southern California January in 1933 at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, California.
Take a breath.
Religion and science proved that these two ideals didn't have to be enemies. On that day, some of the biggest science luminaries of the time from around the world, Edwin Hubble and Albert Einstein to name two, gathered to hear a series of lectures. But it was one man and one lecture that caused Albert Einstein to declare, "This is the most beautiful and satisfactory explanation of creation to which I ever listened."
Wow.
Pooey.
Yeah.
It was well known that on the eve of the Third Reich's rise, Einstein left his homeland of Germany for the United States. But few know that traveling with him was Belgian Catholic priest Georges Lemaître. Oh, now he's Belgian, so Jörg is going to have to help me with the name.
Lemaître.
Lemaître.
Isn't it Lemaître?
Is that how it's said?
I don't know.
Lemaître, a man that Einstein greatly respected. Georges was a religious man, but also a great scientist himself, a cosmologist, in fact. I thought it almost said it's thought it said cosmetologist, but
cosmetologist.
He studied the universe and he cuts hairstyling. Hair.
Wait, that's something else.
Trimmed beards. He's the one responsible for Einstein's awesome hairdo. Most notably, its beginnings. His research beliefs and conclusions generally influence the way we understand our very existence today. Born in 1894 in, oh man, help me out here, Charleroi? George.
And I thought, hey, Chuck, it's my job to script the names, not you.
Why aren't you reading this story?
Well.
He took an early interest in figuring out how things around him worked. He began his studies in civil engineering at the Catholic University of Leuven, the largest French-speaking university in Belgium. He took a break from his studies to serve in the Belgian army as an officer during World War I. He performed admirably, and at the end of the war, he received a Belgian War Cross, an award for bravery on the battlefield. He then returned to his university and earned degrees in mathematics and philosophy.
Yeah.
Big long story about this dude. I'm not going to read this all to you tonight.
Yeah.
But very interesting guy. He's got his little priestly collar on too.
Yeah, it's actually a lengthy article. So yeah, go check it out. Actually, it's kind of timely considering the Ken Ham and the what was it? The creation is debate that.
Yes.
Yeah. Bill Nye. Oh, good Lord. You know, that they had the other night. I actually saw a little bit of it and I don't know. Thought it was kind of thought provoking, but.
I saw something as part of the Winter Olympics that I thought was fascinating in that, you know, you and I are children of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And you remember that the Soviet Union was the enemy. Mm-hmm. And in 1975, I recall seeing the Soviet Apollo link up in space.
Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. The famous handshake in space.
Yeah. Acting like nothing's going on.
The two guys that went up there and did that handshake, the cosmonaut and the astronaut, are actually really good friends right now. They showed a clip of them moose hunting just outside of Moscow.
With their shirts off out in the Russia.
No. These are like 80-year-old guys now.
No, I was thinking of... You know, Putin, you see the pictures of him with his shirt off. And
but it was Nixon who went over to Russia in the Cold War days and started the plan to do that link up in space in 75. And that was the genesis of the International Space Station. And you think about it now, I mean, this is a great segment, about 20 minutes long, about mm-hmm. these two guys and how they used to be, you know, enemies trying to shoot each other out of the sky during the Cold War and whatnot. But you know, now Americans go over to the Baikonur Cosmodrome to go up on Russian rockets to the International Space Station. That's we're right. not launching any more rockets up there. We're yeah. not sending the space shuttle up there. It's like this world of collaboration was totally unheard of 40 years ago when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And had the cards fallen a little different way, this would have been a different story. But I was almost in tears watching this thing thinking, I'm glad it went this way.
Oh, yeah. It could be more nasty if it was.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
And it was nasty at the time. I mean, you know, the communists wanted to stamp out the capitalists, and the capitalists wanted to stop communism. And, you know, who was the bigger aggressor? Probably us.
Maybe.
So anyway, you know, fascinating story about the whole space race, but I won't go to that now. We want to talk to you about how people thought it was fun to get rid of snow. It's been a very snowy winter, and even Craig's got snow, and I'm sick of snow. Hey, I'm moving to Phoenix.
Had snow. It's gone.
Sick of shoveling the snow off your sidewalk? Well, the good folks in 1925 had a brilliant idea for you. Just set it all on fire.
Duh.
Fire.
Yeah.
The cover of the January 1925 issue of Science and Invention magazine included the illustration above, where this man is spreading what looks like fertilizer on his sidewalk, and it's bursting into flames right behind him. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. You know somebody's done this.
The accompanying article told by Harry E. Hale, a man who devised the idea for placing calcium carbide in the snow and just putting a flame to it. The magazine even included plans for a snow burner device that would help distribute the calcium carbide, which when exposed to water and a flame is quite combustible.
What could go wrong?
From the magazine, great care must be exercised in sprinkling calcium carbide upon snow so that when the gas is evolved and ignited, it will not set fire to shrubbery, trees, or the house itself. Under no conditions should such a snow remover be used when a gale is blowing, and the individual drawing the mechanism over the road should always see that it lands, that he heads into any slight breeze which may be blowing, so that his own clothes will not be ignited.
Hey, that's a good idea. By the way, that reminds me, you shouldn't use this. A few weeks ago, you posted that picture from the weather guy.
Yeah,
in your area, and he had like gale force wind or plus.
Oh, it was like 187 mile an hour winds.
Like two times what a hurricane has.
This wouldn't be a good day to take out your flame, your snow flamer. So true story about a man in Pennsylvania who was sick of shoveling snow. He just got done with his driveway, and the plow came by and plowed the end of his driveway.
Mm-hmm.
The man loses it. He takes out a gun, points it. He jumps up on the cab of the snow plow truck.
Oh my gosh.
Makes him stop and says, "Clear this snow out of my driveway now." Well, the man at gunpoint had no choice, so he cleared the driveway, then promptly reported to the police, where the man with the gun was arrested and put in jail.
So he didn't have to worry about the snow anymore.
My point exactly. Thank you. So if you don't want to do snow removal, you can always go to jail.
Hey, you get three squares and you don't have to worry about the snow. Who won? Who won there?
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
And that music is supposed to give me enough time to pull up the next article, which it's taking forever.
It's slow.
Maybe we should just play the music again. You all forgot that Luke Skywalker is a BAMF. I'm not going to tell you what that stands for if you don't already know.
Backwards? No.
He's bad at making fudge.
Sure. Let's go with that.
Footballs? I don't know. Yeah, football.
Yeah.
I have this problem because I'm not a kid anymore. I expect to admit straight up that Han Solo is far and away a better character than Luke Skywalker. And he's just not. Look, I love the guy. He's a scoundrel, and that is sexy, and his sarcasm is welcome among the many do-gooders in his universe. But I feel like his slingshot retorts blind people outright to what anyone else is doing in the Star Wars trilogy. Like the fact that Luke Skywalker spends all of Return of the Jedi being a complete badass when we never talk about it. And everyone is rolling their eyes because so many people don't even like Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't care, okay? So I'm not interested in talking about furry bears versus stormtrooper armor, or even the fact that Han spends a good portion of the movie tied up. He's funnier that way anyhow.
Yeah.
I'm interested in addressing Luke's final sequence of character-defining acts, which are so subtle in their execution that they seem to slide past even the most diehard fans. We have to start by breaking Han out of Hutt prison. So let's do some recapping. Luke sends his best droid buddies to set the stage and put key elements into place. He doesn't bother letting 3PO in on the secret for obvious reasons.
He's got a runny mouth.
You think?
Yeah.
But he strategically lets everyone in there ahead of himself. Lando is already present. Then the droids. Then Leia and Chewie. They are each there to have a separate shot at freeing Han. Though Luke likely knows that Leia is the only one with a real chance. Once she is captured, he swings into action all by his lonesome. Or, to put it another way, Luke sets himself up for the last line of offense. When all else fails, he approaches. And what do you remember? What his first move is? Obi-Wan Kenobi might have tried to mind trick them into the game of into a game of Pinochle, but Luke doesn't have time for that crap.
Yeah, he whips out his midichlorian.
Chicks dig it. Midichlorian number four.
Yeah.
As a definitive first action, that is a dark place to take us. It's a move Vader uses, not Luke's mentors. Yet it's ascribed any villainous overtones. We are meant to go along with it in good faith. But so, I warn you not to underestimate my powers.
Well, the article does go on for a long time. Kind of.
That is a huge long article.
It's making
lots of cases.
Yeah, it's making the case that you know, Luke had everything in hand and really knew what he was doing the whole time. You know, so all the way from
watch it with another eye.
Yeah, he was planning out the whole. He planned out the whole thing about, oh yeah, there's information in here, which is a good point too, that, you know, Luke grew up on Tatooine. So he's obviously heard about the Hutt, Jabba the Hutt, and how bad he is. And, but him, for him to stand up in front of him and, take him on like this was probably a big undertaking for him because he's heard about all this stuff. So, you know, from there to talk about confronting Vader and the Emperor and, so it's pretty cool, and all the way to leading that he's, you know, stating that he's a Jedi. Kind of neat. Good article.
Do not underestimate the power of the Force.
Yeah.
Next, all right, I'm going to let you take this last one.
Yeah, the next article is the credits of that Jar Jar Binks should have gotten. No, it's not.
What? Jar Jar was a BAMF, too. He was bad at making footballs.
Yes. Well, this is an article. Actually, it's a short. I'm sorry. A trailer for a movie documenting Jordowski's Dune, which Alejandro Jordowski is a director. And he was going to do Frank Herbert's Dune before the one that we all know came out. And it was interesting to see some of the direction they were going to take it. At least from the trailer, some of the pictures and the way they were talking about it. So I wanted to throw this in here in case anybody was interested, because I know there are a lot of fans of Dune. The movie I thought was pretty good. The book I liked. So anyway, at least some of the books. I don't know if all of them are loved. But anyway, the universe is there. So it's kind of neat to see. I don't know if you watched this this at all, Chuck.
I have not seen this yet.
Yeah, so I'll be sure to check it out on Netflix.
Sounds like he had bigger plans than what actually got into the film.
Yeah, from a flaming giraffe to all kinds of stuff. Am I kidding? Actually, who else was in there? David Bowie was supposed to be in there. Oh, Marlon Brando. He said he had a lot of people lined up. Of course, you can't really go back and verify Marlon Brando's involvement, but, you know.
Orson Welles. Apparently is in here too, or was.
Was it Orson Welles?
Yeah. Wow. Cool stuff. Yeah, go watch the movie trailer. We've got it in the show notes. You can find all that, of course, at the usual places.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's going to show up on Netflix sooner than later.
What should have been?
Some of the, yeah, sometimes you get documentaries like this that show up on Netflix pretty quick, and it's kind of neat to see. I saw one. It was the real real story about Indiana Jones. And, actually it talks about his, the influences that the guy who put it together, said that George Lucas must have gotten his, direction from to make Indiana Jones the character. It was a couple of, was it two or three? I'm trying to remember if it was two or three, different archaeologists, and some of them, they both had different styles, and one of them was more of a go-getter, and he was out there, was really good with the locals, like you see Indiana Jones, a crack shot. A guy took down, like, this desert marauder kind of guy on a horse. I'm not kidding. It was actually really cool, cool story. So those kind of documentaries show up there from time to time, and I like to watch them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I'm just looking at the play clock. We are running long, and it's time to say good night and thank you to everybody.
Oh, wait, and now for the second half of the show.
that comes along next week. Like Craig said, the next one's 400. And you know what? My travel plans got changed, so we might be doing like a $399.50.
What? 399.5?
399.5.
Okay.
So, until then, we want you to call the listener line at 206-222-2428 or send us an email. You can do a voicemail attachment on there as well. Technorama at checkchat.com. Also on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus, you can find all those links and more over at chuckchat.com/technorama. That's the place to go if you want to know more about melting snow. Special thanks to Mad Marv for all the great blog content during the week, everyone who sent us links, and thank you to everyone who joined us in the chat room and hung out with us. Some people came in, said, "Did I miss it?" and left.
Yeah, in calf. Oh.
Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, give me a binary high five.
101. See you later.
399. 399. 399.
Shut up, John.